Welcome to Caritos. This is Wendy.
And this is Sarah.
Today's podcast, I don't want to go back to the office.
The questions this cast answers are, can I be forced to go back to the office? What can I do to avoid going back to the office? And how do I negotiate to remain working remotely?
If you want the answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
As we get going, on May 7th, we're hosting a virtual effective remote manager over Zoom at 1 p.m. Eastern. And on May 13th, we're starting our virtual public effective manager conference for the month with Spanish translation this time. We know a lot of our audience has asked for manager tools in other languages, and now you or your team can get trained in their native language of Spanish with live translation. We're so excited to bring this to the community. It starts May 13th at 1 p.m. Eastern. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
We'll start with some statistics about people working from home or going back to the office, and it's nothing like some statistics. So a recent survey by KPMG, 83% of the surveyed CEOs expected all of their employees to return to work in company offices by 2027, which is a high watermark after a steady increase over the last 4 years. I think it started at like 20% and now we're up to 83%.
Wendy, do you know, just for comparison, what was the number of remote versus in the office employees before COVID?
I want to say 7%, which sounds really low, but I don't think it was above 10.
It wasn't above 10, the number of employees who are still at home?
No, who were working at home full-time before COVID. So less than 10%. And then it was like 90% during COVID or 80-something percent. And now it's steadily going down. But this is the 83% of CEOs who want their staff back in the office. This is not whether or not people are going back or whether they want to. It's the CEOs. On the other hand, in a survey by Resume Builder, 30% of companies had threatened to fire employees who didn't return to the office. And a Pew survey of workers said that 46% said they'd leave their current job if they were no longer able to work from home. So there's nearly half of people who are working from home are willing to change jobs in order to be able to stay working from home, despite the fact 30% of companies are willing to fire them if they're not working in the office, and 83% of their CEOs want them back in the office. So there's clearly a split in the desires of the different groups that over the next couple of years, we'll see what happens. But let's talk about if you're one of those people who doesn't want to go back to the office, let's see what we can do for you.
Exactly. So our outline for today, first, change jobs, assess your leverage, and propose a compromise. Starting with changing jobs. Folks, if you're currently working from home, but your position isn't explicitly defined as a remote role, we would recommend you begin searching for a job that is specifically designated as work from home immediately. We've got guidance about the process of changing jobs from the moment you make that decision to the first 90 days of your new role. So we're not going to go back and double up and include all of that stuff here. You can find that stuff on our website. Today, what we're going to do is explain why changing jobs is our first piece of guidance.
Right. Because I assume that most people listening to this were like, oh, good, they're going to tell me how I get to stay from home, or working from home. Like, excellent. Like, just tell me what to say. No. And the bad news is we don't have that news. So let us explain why. So first of all, most of us are working remotely either because our existing office jobs shifted to remote work during the pandemic. So we were originally working in an office. We had to go home. That's why we're still working at home. Or because we were hired during the pandemic when companies were operating remotely. So they couldn't bring us into the office. So they hired us in. But the positions weren't originally designated or officially designated as remote roles. They are or were traditional office jobs being done remotely because of the special circumstances.
Exactly. And folks, the differences between jobs that are permanently remote by design versus jobs that happened to become remote due to a pandemic. Your opinion may be that this job can be done just as well remotely as it can be if you drove into an office every day. You can even maybe potentially make the argument that you are more productive at home, and you may have been proving that over time. But unfortunately, going back to Wendy's data, as the surveys of our CEOs will show us, your company does not agree.
So Global Workplace Analytics estimates that full-time telecommuting can save companies between $20,000 and $37,000 per employee per year.
So that's a lot of savings.
Yeah. I mean, like, I can't do the math, but that's a lot of math. Mostly because of the reduced real estate, like they don't need those offices and utility costs because those offices are really expensive to run. And yet, companies are mandating return to office. More and more companies are mandating that, which implies that they believe that the benefits of whatever benefits they get from remote teams is outweighed by those costs, right? And there's a potential of overall team productivity that goes down so much by teams being remote that it's worth more than $37,000 per person per year. Because otherwise, they wouldn't be mandating you to come back to the office. They're not doing it for fun. Many people believe that companies only care about their bottom line, which is true and not true in different... We don't want to argue that now. But when it comes down to it, if the bottom line says we could save $37,000 by people being at home, and that was more than they thought the benefits of coming back to the office was, then they'd be doing it.
That's exactly it. I think it's important, Wendy, to remember it's not just about you. Again, folks, you may think to yourself, and rightfully so, potentially, you can do your job better at home and it can be done remotely. But this isn't always about you. To Wendy's point, it's about team dynamics. It's about the leader of the team. As a manager who's been managing now remotely for over 10 years, I can tell you firsthand, the job of a manager at a distance is double as difficult as the job of a manager in the office. So it may not be you and your personal situation that is the need for change so much as organizationally, the organization benefits, to Wendy's point, to the tune of $37,000 a year for you personally, the organization benefits having you in the office. Now, while we're going to provide guidance in a little bit here about how to discuss remote work with your company, we do want to emphasize, because of all these reasons, that success is unlikely if you are not currently in what is designated a permanently remote role. You may have strong evidence of your personal productivity and effectiveness, but companies are not making decisions on an individual by individual basis. They're making decisions based on patterns and metrics across hundreds or thousands of employees, at least across a team of individuals, not just you as a person. Now, we're not saying whether remote work is better or worse for you or your company. That's not what our cast today is about. What we're trying to do is help you recognize that in terms of this negotiation, if you will, those who have more information have the stronger position, and therefore we are arming you with more information.
We don't do this to give everybody bad news. Like, I don't sit here every week recording bad news for everybody and being, you know, corporate first and not believing in real human beings. We do actually all of that. But as we said, Sarah and I recorded yesterday, this is Reality Tools.
Yeah, exactly. Not fantasy tools.
Yeah. So this is why our first step of this guidance is, or this podcast is, to find a new role that's permanently remote or designated as remote. And we do have podcasts about making job changes proactively on your own terms rather than on the company's timing, because it's much easier for you to do that. It's so much better.
Search for a job while you're getting paid to do it? Yes. So yeah, much easier.
That's one reason, right? You're more likely to find a remote role that meets your other needs and desires if you can conduct that search on your own timetable, not when the company has delivered an ultimatum.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. You don't want to be pushed to that need. Start looking now. Make it safe for yourself. And we want to remind you that there's really no such thing as permanent in a job. And we keep saying, find a role that is designated as remote or permanently remote position. And We want you to know that that word permanent is less permanent than one might like. Changes in customer needs, the economy, company culture, and both senior and immediate management mean that companies and the jobs within them, the people within those jobs as well, are constantly in flux. Mostly, it's small changes every day, but now and again, there is the need for seismic changes. Whatever the job is when you start, whatever it is designated in terms of its location, will not stay the same for days, let alone for years. So this isn't a full insurance policy. It's just a better one than you have now.
Exactly. Yeah, I always feel for people who say, I took this job because I loved the manager that I interviewed with, and then he left a week after I started. And I always feel bad for those people because nothing's permanent, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And what's more, we'd also like to remind you that the evidence so far is that working from home will limit your career. Studies have found that remote workers are promoted 31% less frequently than their office-based counterparts. And remote employees are 38% less likely to receive bonuses, and they tend to work 50% more overtime compared to in-office workers. And finally, remote workers are 35% more likely to be laid off than their counterparts. So again, we're not arguing for remote work or whether that's better for you or your company or the opposite. We're just giving you facts so that you make a decision for you based on the facts and not on things that you might assume that are not true.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And folks, we're also not just saying you should give up and accept your company's return to the office mandate, but that if you choose to pursue the continuation of remote work, it has consequences for you and for your career. We know it is our responsibility. We're not here to make friends, unfortunately. We are here to help you understand the risks before you make your decision. We talk to a lot of professionals when we're talking in our conferences, whether it be effective communicator, effective manager, and people don't often know what the implications are of the choices that they make.
And they have false assumptions about, oh, well, if I'm productive, like we were just saying, if I'm productive, more productive at home, then the company should let me stay at home. Well, yes, but you're making an entirely different decision based on an entirely different set of factors than they are.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Wendy. You should just know the implications of the decisions that you make, and they may still be the right decisions for you. But we want you to know it before it's too late.
I mean, there might be a reason, like you may be, your spouse is at school and, you know, they're going to be done in 2 years and then you'll go back to the office. You know, that's a reasonable reason to make that decision, stay at home and know that you're a little bit less safe for those 2 years while your spouse starts her career or starts their career. And that's a good decision for you, but you have to know the facts before you can make decisions.
Yes, that's exactly it.
If you have a group of 20 to 30 people who need our training, either on-site or virtually, Manager Tools working directly with your team is the most cost-effective option. For a flat fee that includes all expenses, we come to the workplace on a date that works for you and deliver the training. We can also provide a bit of customization and tailoring for your group. This includes annual licensing, and because we know that organizations care about cost, we allow for this cost to be reduced when you have a group of 30. It applies to all of our core organizational trainings: manager, senior manager, communicator, and hiring manager. On-site or virtual, contact Maggie for more details about training your group at customerservice@manager-tools.com.
Our next point, assess your leverage, which is about gathering even more facts. So searching for a new role will also give you information about the market value of your skills and experience, and how marketable those skills and experience, how desirable those are in the market, will help you determine whether or not you have enough leverage to even propose to your current organization that you continue working remotely. You want to have the upper hand, and the way to have the upper hand is to be something, someone they want to keep, because getting another one of you is really hard.
Yeah, and it's costly. They don't want another one of you. They want you. They do.
Yeah. So the company has done their research to find out whether they can or should push employees to return to work. So now you need to do your research to find out if you can or should resist.
Exactly. Now, folks, the most simple measure, one that is accessible to all of us all the time, of how much leverage you have is the unemployment rate. The higher the rate, the more companies have leverage because they have jobs that people want. The lower the unemployment rate, the more candidates and employees are in control because they have the skills and companies need them. Now, we're recording this in January 2025. And at this point, the unemployment rate has been at around 4% for just over 6 months. That headline rate, though, belies the difference in unemployment in different roles, industries, and locations. For example, the tech market had a hiring boom after the pandemic. Then, overhiring caused a bunch of layoffs. Then, AI caused companies to reconsider everything. So, really, through 2024, the demand for software engineers was at an all-time low. So even though the unemployment rate may be suggestive of things are good, not so much for the software engineers. Ask them.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're a software engineer, you have much less leverage than you think when you want to make a case for different conditions to your peers, like you want to stay at home even if your peers are going back to the office, or if you want different conditions than the ones that the company wants to impose. Because your skills and experience, that combination of skills and experience that you have, is unique. But the reality is that companies know there are lots of qualified software engineers who could fill the roles that they have open. You're perfect and unique as you are, but you're not the only person who can work in that slot, right? It's not like a key, you know? Your individual excellence does not automatically translate into negotiating power when there are a lot of other people who could equally fill that role and who are potentially unemployed and are willing to work in an office because they need a job.
Yes, that's exactly it. Now, folks, your leverage is increased when you have specialist skills that are less common in the marketplace. You are contributing significantly to company performance. Your manager or organization has a clear and detailed idea of what you're doing and how what you do contributes to company performance. Your peers are also continuing to work remotely. And your relationships with your manager, your peers, and the rest of the organization are strong. So there are things you can do to increase your leverage every single day.
Yeah, well, is make sure your boss knows what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Build a good relationship with your boss.
One item that people assume increases their leverage, which in general does not, is their history or experience with the company. People who've been doing a job for a while tend to assume only I can do that or only I know that. And they believe that that makes them indispensable. But the fact that companies have widespread layoffs where they eliminate positions by location or job title and there's no regard for the individual expertise or how long that person has been there, that's kind of the proof that institutional knowledge, that experience or history knowledge, provides less protection than you might think. My dad was an airplane engineer. He started when he was 15 and a half and he left the company when he was 60. But I remember all through his 40s when there were rounds and rounds of layoffs and he kept saying, people don't know how to work with these airplanes that we have, like because they don't have the history. We're bringing on all these new cheap people who have no experience and like the old people are leaving and they don't know how to use this. And the airline, it still exists. It's still flying airplanes. It could entirely see his point, and history shows it didn't matter. And that makes me sad because that's my dad, but you know,
yeah, right?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I talked to a gentleman in our community just the other day, worked with the same company, was there for 15 years. The company was acquired. And in the acquisition, the new organization decided to get rid of that part of the business. And there's no conversation like, hey, will you move from Philly to Chicago? And I'm not saying he would have, but what I'm saying is there's not a conversation with each of those people that's like, hey, how can we make you fit? You've been here a really long time. Rather, it's a, yeah, we're getting rid of that side of the business. So
yeah,
you're going to have to find a new job. And folks, the research around this, the data around this that we've got gives you the three things you need to understand before having any conversations with your manager. First, you got to figure out how much leverage you have. Then you need to have the strengths of your case for remote work. And finally, you need to have your backup plan if the conversation does not go your way. The backup plan being what you'll do if you cannot reach an agreement. This is what negotiation experts call your best alternative to a negotiated agreement, or a BATNA. In simple terms, it's answering the question, what will I do if they say no? That alone, knowing what your next step is, will prepare you for the conversation, will give you a peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
To approach that conversation, yeah, without the highly emotional state that one might be in if they're having these negotiations where they could potentially have to find another job. You want to know what your insurance is.
Exactly. And one of those insurances, not that we've mentioned it yet, is 6 months of your salary in the bank, which we've said 1,000 times, but we'll say it again because it's relevant here. And when we're talking, we've used the word negotiation several times. And the last part of this guidance is propose a compromise. And originally when I wrote it, it said negotiate a compromise. And Mark and I were talking about it. And I said, it's not really a negotiation because that implies roughly equal power between the two parties. In order to negotiate, you both have to have something that each other wants. But as we've established, you don't have the kind of leverage with your company that they have over you, right?
Yes, exactly.
They're worth more to you than you are to them as an individual. Not that you're not worth a lot, but that's the way it works. So it's important to be prepared for the possibility that you won't get what you want. And again, it's not about taking the corporation side over your individual preferences. We're just trying to acknowledge the reality of the situation.
That's exactly it, folks. Your compromise will depend on your leverage, your role, your relationships, what you want, what the company wants. There's many different factors that will play its part in this compromise. So we're not going to be overly specific about what it should be because all of those things could be completely different for every listener who's hearing this today. But those are some of the things that you want to consider.
So we will encourage you to listen to the podcast called Negotiation Chapter 5, Preparation Illustrated, because it contains the parable of the orange, which is a famous negotiation parable, and it's about finding things that both parties want. And it's about the sad side of when you don't realize that you could share the orange. So in the parable, there are two groups, and from the outside, the answer is obvious. Everyone can get what they want if they put aside their unwillingness to be satisfied with less than the whole orange and their desire to keep the others from getting what they want. But they don't. So they don't ask the right questions. And you can only ask good questions and get good answers if you have strong relationships in the first place. So back to relationships with your team and your manager and the organization.
Mm-hmm. Relationships are everything. We talk about it all the time over here at Career Tools. And while we talk about the power of relationships in practically everything we write, and we firmly believe that better relationships increases your chances of success, the more likely you are to be successful, this is one situation where even the strongest relationships are unlikely to change the outcome. As sad as it may be, just having great relationships and being exceptionally good at your job and being there for 50 years just might not be enough this time. The organizational forces against you at work are just too strong. And again, we are not here to take the corporation's side. We are not suggesting their way is better or more valid than your individual preference. We're acknowledging that this is the reality of the situation. And the sooner you grasp, you take hold of that reality, the more in control you will be of your personal situation.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this in 10 years, things might be completely different. If the economy is the other way up, then
you might have more leverage.
Yeah, exactly. But right now, in 2025, and whether or not you want to go back to work, this is the situation you're in. So the most effective strategy, if you wish to remain working remotely, is to research your options and find a role which is permanently remote, permanently work from home. Then assess your market value before you have any conversations about whether or not you stay or leave with your company. And in many cases, finding a new permanently remote role will be more successful than trying to negotiate an exception to a company-wide mandate.
That's it.
Yeah. I feel sad now. But I hope that that makes some people feel, gives them a way forward rather than feeling trapped by a company saying, hey, you all have to come back and you don't want to come back. At least you know.
It feels a little hostage. So now there you go, folks. You are not a hostage anymore. You are fully in control. Embrace reality.
Control your own life. All right. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thanks, everyone. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye.